This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen live or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, grade it, change the point it to me, press it, snap it, work it, quick, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quickly write it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, call it, find it, view it, code it, jam and lock it, surf it, scroll it, pause it, click it, cross it, crack it.
This is Joy 94.9 and you're listening to Technogaze, where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets and technology. We have a new person here. It's Ty.
Hi.
How are you?
Yes, lovely. What a wonderful day.
It's a beautiful day. Now, your geek credentials, Ty, what are they?
Look, I ran the technical and production department for a major media company for quite a few years. Also consult into the travel industry and a technical viewpoint. So, yeah, a bit of a nerd all round, really.
We do like nerds. Now, your voice may be familiar to some people who are MGLC followers.
Possibly. The Melbourne Gay and Lesbian Chorus. I'm the vice president and also sing on one of the basses, and I hang out on some FM spectrum as well from time to time.
We can hear the undertones.
The dulcet tones.
And that other dulcet tone, of course, is Mark's voice, who is pushing our buttons.
I'm doing my best to push buttons, yes.
Yes.
Very good at that.
We're doing a Freaky Friday. Instead of me pushing buttons, I'm on the other side of the desk, which is a bit strange.
Is it?
It is. It feels very weird, actually.
I'm quite enjoying it.
Well, it's interesting seeing it from this viewpoint, because, of course, usually at home listening to the show, of course.
So
it's very nice to be here to actually be in the midst of it.
We are glad to have you.
We've been talking about this for years.
Years and
me
years.
Me coming on and doing, helping out and doing Technogaze, so I'm a bit excited. Yeah. I hope I go okay. No pressure.
I'm sure it will go okay. We've got a full show today.
We do.
And talking about full,
yes.
The internet, is it? Full, that is. And because there have been lots of stories about the internet filling up, and we have to decide, do we, you know, keep on going with it, just go home and have some lunch?
Back to the dark ages.
Yeah, that's the one. We'll find out. Bitcoin has been bartered. I said bartered. According to the ATO.
Yes. We've been waiting for this for quite some time from the ATO. Their thoughts on what Bitcoin is. So
several people aren't happy, but we'll talk about that a little bit later on. And Uber has been wrapped over the knuckles in Berlin for various activities.
Like Uber.
Yes.
Yeah, they seem to be in the news a lot. Talking about Germany, spy versus spy again, with the Germans this time doing a little bit of eavesdropping accidentally instead of the Americans.
Which, that reference back to Snowden leaking information about how the US spied on
Angela Merkel's phone calls and how outraged they were.
We love a bit of tit for tat, don't we?
Exactly. It's good to know that everyone's keeping up with the Joneses. And the UK is looking at doing a trial with some semi-self-driving trucks.
All right, this story terrifies me.
What, the convoy of trucks, one behind each other, going through?
Well, being just having technology drive them instead of a human being. That'll end okay, won't it?
Well, maybe.
What is the line? What could possibly go wrong?
Exactly. And Apple's continuing in some innovation with taking some existing technology and doing some smart things with it. So we'll look at that a little bit later on as well.
I love it how innovation in Apple terms is often take an existing technology and make it
better, you know,
better or popular, perhaps.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how this one goes in that regard.
That's right. Now, of course, if you want to get in touch with us, and we would love for you to get in touch with us, you can give us a call on 0427. Actually, no, that is the SMS number, 0427-JOY949. The phone call number to leave a message with the lovely Heath is 1300-JOY949. Or you can send us an email onair@joy.org.au.
You can tweet us too.
At Technogaze.
At Technogaze, TechnoGaze.
Or you can have a look at us on our Facebook page. And talking about Facebook, we'd like to say a very quick hello to Lorraine and Damien, who are our latest Facebook page followers.
Hi, Lorraine and Damien.
Thank you for joining us in our lovely community of technogays.
Like us. Exactly.
So, yeah, if you do like us on Facebook, we will mention you on air because we like to acknowledge the people that are supporting us.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's always nice to get feedback like that, and likewise feedback into the studio with messages or emails or anything else that you want to send us.
Mm-hmm.
So, internet, is it full?
Yes. This is a story that came up during the week. A number of headlines have been popping around to say, oh my God, is the internet full?
Has the internet melted down?
What does the internet full mean?
And this is a thing that's been going on in the past, or people have mentioned the idea of IP addresses being, there's a finite number of them and there's probably not enough for the total number of devices, particularly in the IPv4 space.
Yeah, and particularly now that everybody has multiple IP addresses, because, when you've got a smartphone, you have an IP address allocated to your phone, so yep. There are many, many more devices than first came out. But this is something different.
Completely different. It's actually there's a protocol called BGP, isn't there?
There is.
I don't know how technical we should get.
No, we shouldn't get too technical, because
I reckon when you lose me, that's about that's about.
I did see your eyes kind of glazing over it. It's good to have that feedback directly in the studio, actually, instead of,
the eyes. It's about how the internet works, isn't it, at its core, and that the infrastructure that's been set up isn't going to be particularly appropriate for the future, and it's getting to that capacity now.
Yeah. So one of the strengths of the internet is that, much like when a road is shut, you can take a different route. The same thing with your internet traffic. The internet automatically knows if one route isn't available because it's either full or it's running slow or something like that, it will reroute the traffic. But to do that, the routers or the bits of hardware in between that don't sit in your house but sit inside your internet service provider have to know where to direct the traffic. And it's these things called routes that are starting to fill up in some of their boxes. Because a lot of earlier routers had a limit of 512,000 different routes that they could store in memory.
Right.
And with the proliferation of more websites and everything else, these routers need a lot more, and they're starting to fill up.
Sounds to me a lot like the Y2K bug.
No.
That was a fishing line for
Michael.
That
was a fishing line, yes. No, it's not like the Y2K bug was much harder.
His reaction indicates that you were successful with your fishing trip.
Oh, hook, line, and? Is there a little sound effect for that little fishing rod? We should get a little fishing rod sound effects of reel him in. Now, unlike the Y2K bug, which involved a lot of code changes, successful code changes, because not much happened, this one just needs a simple software upgrade in most instances.
A simple software upgrade.
So where do you see the problems with that? Wouldn't there be how many internet service providers are there around the world?
Thousands. Hundreds of thousands, I'd say, is a good number.
So you're trying to coordinate and getting them all to upgrade. Is that the...
Well, it's not so much them. I think it's the customers that are affected during the upgrade process.
I have enough problems updating or keeping my laptops and various connected devices up to date, let alone, and these routers are sort of like, there's one for thousands of users. So when they're upgraded in this regard, they have to be turned off for a while. And those people that are on the other end of it might
not have internet for a while. Well, that is a problem.
But the flip side is, if you don't do it, lots of people don't get internet. Well, don't get access to certain sites.
What are we going to do without the internet, or is that a bigger topic to discuss? What happens to the world if the internet doesn't exist? No, that's a big topic.
No, I stay in bed if
that's right.
Actually, I can't even read a book because I only read electronic books.
I don't
books.
Know what the... Yeah.
I'd have nothing to download.
I'd have to look out the window to see what the weather's like.
Oh, my gosh.
That wouldn't work. That's not reliable at all, is it?
Not for Melbourne. It could be raining the other side.
Well, is the internet version of the weather any more reliable is the question there.
Well, it depends on where the cameras are pointed, really.
Wait, what? Which cameras are we talking about?
Weather webcams.
They've gone off topic. Right. Possibly.
Now, dragging you back onto topic, Uber has been doing some interesting stuff in Berlin. They've just been unsuspended.
Yeah, so we talked about it last week, didn't we, of Uber being the hire car service company. They have an app that you can download to your phone, and you can choose to look for cabs or hire cars in your area and pay a certain premium to have them come to your door. And there's lots of really cool... Uber's not the only one in this regard, but
it seems to be the most popular one that's expanding globally.
I like the leather interiors and the bottle of water and the lollies in the back, but that's just me.
But one of the things is that Uber is challenging the existing status quo, and Berlin have said that, well, hang on a minute, you're really violating the Public Transport Act, hence we're putting on a ban.
Yep.
Uber chose to ignore the ban and kept on operating, which is a very non-German response because, you know, the Germans, if you say do this or don't do this, most people react. And they've lodged an appeal, and as part of the appeal, the suspension has been lifted temporarily.
Right. Mm. Okay.
They are certainly challenging existing business models, aren't they?
Yes.
And not just in Germany, obviously, here in town and everywhere, which, you know, there are some opponents to that, of course.
Yeah, and I guess this type of thing has been very successful where you've removed the middleman, where, you know, we've spoken about disintermediation before. Mm. Now, in this case, you're not really removing the middleman, except you're going to almost private cars rather than, centrally controlled taxi service.
Mm.
And yes, it does challenge a lot of the things that are in place, and probably skirts a very fine line with some of the laws.
I mean, I like it because the app works well. I mean, it's some of the other services for the traditional cab companies, they've got apps that are pretty good. But
I think it actually has given the traditional taxi services a bit of a kick up the bum, because there is a feature set of the app, which is actually a very big part of the whole experience of hiring a car.
I like knowing where the car is. It's five minutes away. It's on this corner.
You find a lot of taxi apps now have that feature as well.
Need to look for more taxi apps.
Actually, one of the things I noticed on my taxi app is that you can now say what radio station you want to listen to when you get into the taxi.
Yes.
And there is no Joy 949 on it, unfortunately.
No. We need people power there. We need to, send submissions to get Joy 94.9 added to the list.
Well, I hope they get out of their issues in Berlin.
Hmm.
Yes.
Berlin is, it's good that... I like the fact that they did put their hand up and say, no, but now they've kind of capitulated, so...
Hmm. Well, it's going to go through the courts, no doubt, and we'll see what happens. Mm. Now, we've got lots of good stories coming up. This is TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9.
TechnoGaze.
It's 17 minutes past midday here on TechnoGaze, Joy 94.9. In the studio, we have Ty, Mark, and myself, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Bitcoin is not money, says the Australian Tax Office.
Right.
So it's barter. It's like swapping, I don't know, three chickens for a...
My grandmother has some sort of bartering thing up in Queensland where, they've done some knitting or some gardening or something, and then somebody else will come around and fix their computer for them. And it's a barter system. So it's Bitcoin just exactly like that, but online.
Yes, basically. As far as the ATO is concerned. Exactly. So your grandmother, I hope she's, giving money to the tax office.
No, I'm sure this organisation would probably be in the same ilk as Bitcoin, where the tax office would go, no, that's a barter system, so no tax.
She should knit three and pearl three for them, or something like that.
So what is this?
Does she crochet? Sorry, we're getting off topic.
What does this mean for taxation purposes? So I presume it's about, ATO, what the law is or what their rulings are in terms of transactions that occur on Bitcoin, right?
It means more complexity and probably more cost.
From the ATO?
No. Why would they do that? And more cost for businesses when they're dealing with Bitcoin. Because, what happens traditionally when a company buys something with cash, they pay GST, but they're also able to claim that GST back.
Mm.
In a barter system, if the company buys something with Bitcoin, then they can't claim the GST component back. So they've got to pass that on to the end consumer. So prices in theory could go up. And if they sell with Bitcoin, they still have to, the customer will pay GST and they still have to pay that to the governments somehow. But there's a whole lot more of complex record keeping than they need to do using Bitcoin.
That sounds quite ridiculous to me to have to, if I'm not capable of claiming a tax back for a purchase that is business related or whatever, but to have that still taxable is a bit of a concern.
I think this is a way to discourage using Bitcoin as a transaction.
It's an opposition currency.
Yes, well, that's it. Yes. And there are a lot of people that argue that Bitcoin isn't a true currency. And, you know, it's got some elements of currency and some elements that's not currency. And one of the very strong things that I think set it aside from most currencies is that with most currencies, governments will literally print money when they need to get some cash into the economy. And,
which I
you
can
know,
do then.
I'm waiting for the 3D printer to print some money.
No, a 3D printer, you just go to the gold bars. You just go straight to the gold.
What would you make it out of?
Alchemy. You'd probably need the gold to start with, wouldn't you? I think that's the idea of 3D printing anyway.
Yes, spoilers. Exactly. Now I've just lost complete train of thought about what we're talking about, Bitcoin. Now, I keep on having this idea in my head is, you know, when you're exchanging the sheep for the, I don't know, for the bales of wool, yes. that you hand over a leg of the sheep to the ATO. Is that right. a GST component? Thank you very
they're gonna
much.
Need, they're going to need bigger offices.
Yeah, so, you know, the ATO's been thinking about this for a while and...
Well, it's also been delayed. I'd be interested to know why it was delayed. Was there some sort of, like, you know, negotiation, something that happened behind the scenes that we haven't really heard about that's, you know...
Who would they negotiate with, though?
Well, with themselves. They might be, you know, one academic versus another academic.
Yeah, it could be.
Or, I don't know, if they're called tax boffins. Perhaps we should call them tax boffins.
There'd be people that are very interested in this topic.
Yes.
Was that a nod?
No, well, I mean, for, you know, people who find tax exciting.
Yes.
I know, I'm very grateful for the people who are.
Yes.
Who do find it.
Oh, hey.
Well, you know, they save Same me a lot of money.
That's right.
You're listening to Technogaze here on Joy 94.9.
Yes. Now, the German government have said, oops. Yeah, they weren't very happy when, you know, through the Snowden revelations, everyone found out that the US government was spying on Angela Merkel's phone calls. But it appears that, you know, their equivalent service have spied on Hillary Clinton's phone calls.
What's good for the goose is good for the gander, right?
Exactly.
What I want to know is, did you practice how to actually say the German intelligence service?
The Bundesnachrichtendienst. I can't do it with a very fluid one word.
That was good. No, I didn't want to have a go, so that's fantastic. So how did they... what did they do accidentally?
Well, I think they trawl through as much phone data as they can and listen in wherever they can and, you know, just happen to come across Hillary Clinton one day.
Yeah, it'd be like some dude in their security agency or whatever said, "That's Hillary Clinton's voice. Let's tell the Angela Merkel because she might want to just say, hey, this happened."
Because obviously if they're, you know, accidentally spying, like everybody knows about it, so it was how to get out.
A German newspaper.
Ah.
Leaked this. Now... Last year, Angela Merkel did say that all sort of these type of accidental intercepts should be destroyed, but for some reason, the German intelligence agency are yet to do it.
Mm. They're busy
things with that data.
No, maybe.
Yes. Now, you know, it's not only the German intelligence agency that's spying. ASIO and the police are sort of being assisted in their spying efforts by Telstra, who have been handing over metadata for quite a while.
Now, this one's topical because, you know, we've been talking about, or our benevolent Attorney General, George Brandis, and, of course, his Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, have both been very bad at describing what data retention rules need to be implemented. And so, it's been quite topical. A lot of tech publications have been, you know, discussing these issues.
Yeah, there's been a fair amount of FUD out there. Fear,
yeah.
Uncertainty and doubt.
So, is it, what are the facts?
The facts, well...
no one knows the facts.
This is
a
problem because the government is so haphazard about how they describe what's going on that it's not very clear. But just a reminder... It's already happening today. But so data retention is occurring as we speak.
And what are they retaining? What's the... So, it yeah.
Well, it comes down to the definition of what metadata is.
Yes.
And this was also the lack of clarity from the government in talking about these data retention laws because they were saying, we're not collecting what you're looking at, but we're collecting where you're going to. Well,
yeah, because it was like, we're not tracking the URL, we're tracking the IP
address.
Forgive me if I'm wrong, but isn't that the same thing? Can't you then retrospectively look up what the URL is off the IP?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes and no. Mainly yes, but...
metadata, right? So... It's about the envelope and not the contents, which is a bit of a ridiculous thing to say, particularly for web pages, when you know the URL, which could be considered part of the envelope. Then you know the content of that web page at that point in time as well, because it's publicly accessible. You know, that's information about a person's browsing habits that is could be considered personal as well. So if you know
just
that you went
about
to this
the website I go visit,
precisely, you know.
Well, I think last week Mark used the example of, you know, I went to the doctor's booking web service and then I went to the STI clinic's web service. Well, you know why you can put two and two together.
Yeah. Yes. So, and there's also, I think, one of the things about this whole discussion is that we've come to the realization that the technology does exist to monitor this sort of stuff. So, as much as iiNet typically say, you know, we don't like the idea of data retention, they have the capability, for example, to for the sake of their own billing purposes, determine what websites you're going to, what sites you're not going to count them against your data or not. You know, because they've got a freebie sort of free zone type service or whatever.
Like your ABC iView and stuff like that could be
In order to do that, they need to do what's called deep packet inspection, which is that next level of technology in. So IP addresses, that's pretty quick and easy to figure out. But the technology to get into the contents of each web request, even if it's just a URL that you want for that web request, like what page of the internet you're looking at, that needs deep packet inspection. The fact that that exists means that essentially telcos can find out everything about what you're looking at, maybe with the exception of SSL transactions. So when you've got HTTPS in the URL, they can't necessarily get into that.
But they can.
So there are vulnerabilities out to achieve that. But, well, anyway, that's a whole different discussion.
Yep.
So it's yeah, we're in a very odd state now where we the technology exists. It's all about the law and the rule and what's actually what's stipulated as being allowed and not allowed.
What's interesting about this particular story is that the government's saying, oh, yeah, we just want the IP address. But in the current instances where Telstra is handing over this metadata to the police in ASIO, it includes the full URL and not just the IP address.
Yes.
So this is precedent. This is precedent that spy agencies and the police want URLs.
And I mean, obviously they need this for counter-terrorism reasons, and that kind of goes, oh, yeah. And then, of course, it's just that line of, oh, where is that line between keeping what I'm up to? Because I'm a, you know...
It's a bit of a moral dilemma, isn't it? To say, do we trust the government to only be using it for counterterrorism activities, or are they, you know, what agency, what security service might be looking at, you know, what location you were when you made that SMS that got sent from there to there? Was it on a road? Were you moving at the time? Maybe that would be grounds to
fine
you.
Speeding?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's all sorts of examples where it could have become a problem.
And in terms of trust...
If it stops you speeding, it's not a problem.
Well, yes.
In terms of trust...
But if we don't know about it, then it won't stop us.
Well,
right?
True.
You know, that's the whole point of the rule of law in a democracy, is to not be scared of your government, to actually just know the rules that you're working towards, and to avoid doing it as a consequence.
You'll get an immediate SMS when you're speeding to let you know, so you look at your phone and then get another fine for looking at your phone while you're driving, because you should not do that. It is bad.
That might be called entrapment. Just saying.
Okay, a little light will light up on your dashboard with a dollar sign.
But yeah, essentially with that story, the government should actually know what they're talking about.
Well, the confusing aspect of this...
it would be nice, wouldn't it?
Malcolm Turnbull actually flipped it around. It wasn't about the websites that you're looking at all. It's actually about the IP address that you are connecting from, so they want to track that information. So then that could be correlated with other data that they no doubt have, like this Telstra ASIO little patch that's going on. If they know the IP address, that IP address was attached to this particular person, which at the moment is a bit of a grey area, because we always get different IP addresses when we connect to the internet. It's just the way it's been
building at work. It's all the same IP address.
Yeah. But for consumer stuff, definitely it changes from one to the next. So that's one of the other explanations that's been given to us about what this whole data retention thing is, and it's all a bit wishy-washy and no one really knows what the hell's going on, and that's concerning.
And from my perspective, it might be that, yes, I might trust the government of today, but I'm not going to trust the government of tomorrow. And do I trust the government and their agencies to access this data whenever they want without going through some sort of process that where somebody has to authorise
it?
Yeah,
which would be nice. I would hope that would be the case.
Yes, yeah, exactly right. It's 29 minutes past midday here on TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9.
TechnoGaze.
This Joy program has a podcast and you can subscribe to it at joy.org.au.
Indeed, we do have a podcast of TechnoGaze. And so if you can't catch the show live or you want to hear it again, you can go to iTunes, Stitcher or the Joy website.
I'm going to be on a podcast.
You are.
How cool.
The entire back catalogue.
It's quite large.
Call it.
Back to the catalogue. We have a back catalogue. Wow.
Just don't listen to the first one. It was a very, very much a test show.
Come on. They're the best.
I want to listen to the first one then. Sorry, Ty, haven't you listened to the back catalogue yet?
I haven't quite got through it all.
Because that was a prerequisite of coming on air today.
Yes, I may have not done that bit of the prep either.
Big red mark for that one.
In show number 3 at the 2-minute 37 mark, what did the on-air presenter say?
Probably, oops, I stuffed up.
Hang on, Mark, I think maybe your opinion has changed over the time because we've databased everything you've ever said. And we're just going to do a little search and your opinion's changed on that.
If anyone is OCD enough to come up with that to understand whether my opinion, and I suspect my opinion has changed on a few things.
Would there be technology out there that surely you could just run them through a service and it'll just transcribe everything automatically and voice recognition and we could do that?
Get onto that.
Mm. Do you know what would be great? To listen back to some of the older shows and see if there are any predictions about what was going to happen with technology in the future and see how good or bad they were.
That's great, yeah.
I think we did do a few of those, actually. Towards the end of the year.
Welcome to the Crystal Gale moment on the Crystal Ball, Crystal Gale? Crystal Ball of TechnoGaze. We're going to look into the future and... Right? Okay.
Yes.
All right.
And our general advice to anybody who listens to the show, if we predict something, ignore it.
Yeah. Especially Bitcoin share price of
BlackBerry.
Of
yes, thank
apple,
you.
Yeah.
No, wait. A certain fruit. Yes.
Oh, we're moving on to a topic now that I love talking about.
Mm. Excellent. I have somebody who's on the same wavelength as
yes.
me.
Oh, yes. You two have bonded over this, haven't you?
We have. How about using your 3D printer to make some money?
3D printing.
Yes. Mm. And money making 3D printing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a new Kickstarter project that's out there called Air Energy 3D that's looking to allow you to print a portable power station.
Right.
Or wind turbine, I should say, rather than power station. Wind turbine, power station, tomato, whatever. What, 3 kilowatts versus a gigawatt?
Well, yeah,
some numbers.
Burning coal out into the atmosphere versus turbine.
Turbine, yes.
It's kind of clean energy.
Mm. So this little project allows you to print the turbine. The turbine's quite a good design. So it's like a helix type of vertical design that's sort of knitted together. You can put it into a backpack. Carry it with you and generate some electricity and make some money.
That actually looked kind of artistic as a piece of artwork as well, I thought.
It did. Like you have in your back gardens, the little thing chimes hanging down, you get the little wind turbine going through it. Yeah.
So essentially they're printing this, you know, 3D printer of this wind turbine that will make more money than it costs to print.
Over its life, yeah, hopefully it will. Now, obviously, you can't print the electronic side of it, so that's still something that you have to buy and assemble. But at least the main mechanics of it, you can print. And so might be some of these popping up, depending on how successful the Kickstarter project is.
I was thinking about buying Mum like a 3D printer for doing just for arts and crafts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because that would be good and practical and, yeah. But she'd have to get some OCD. Is it OCD software? No, what OCD software?
CAD software.
My mum probably already has that.
I hope she listens.
Now, Mark's mum has just messaged in.
Yeah, what's ICD software? Man, that's funny.
I'm just about to tweet the address for this particular wind turbine.
Have they reached their
they've got about 30 days to go and they're halfway through their funding requirements.
So with the funding, did you you spend a bit of money and do you get one at the end of the process once it's funded? Is that how it works?
I didn't go into the complete detail.
I would hope so, because I'd like a little 3D turbine printer.
Well, you'd probably certainly get the design to be able to print it. Yes. Now, Apple are very good in design, and you know, ease of use is one of the hallmarks. And they're looking at a couple of things that we've taken for granted and seen how they can improve it.
Like what?
The mouse, the mere humble mouse.
What can you possibly do with the mouse?
Well, I would have thought the mouse is the mouse. That's it. But they're looking at adding pressure sensitivity onto the clicking. So if you click hard or click soft, the mouse will be able to tell the computer what you're doing, and then the computer will be able to act accordingly. So it might be, Ty, you're a little bit agitated today. You're pressing the mouse very hard. You need to go meditate for half an hour or something like that. Or it could be that you're playing a game and the harder that you press, the character jumps higher.
Yeah, so this is, it's kind of technology that you'd expect out of game consoles, right?
Mm.
Yeah. It's interesting to what opportunity there is to use this kind of technology for a standard desktop environment. Outside of the gaming world, like the gaming stuff is quite obvious. It's already potentially been done. But what, could it react more differently, to your reactions if you are doing a particular, if you're programming and you click really hard? Does that mean you're sick of this bug and just want to kill it?
I suppose. I suppose you'd need to learn how to use it in the various. I don't know. I don't know if I want to concentrate that much about going. Am I pushing this too hard to get it to paste and copy? And I suppose like anything, is if you use it enough, it becomes
second nature.
Well, it's like the when we did the planning meeting at my place last night. Got a new one of those smart TVs, and it's got all the hand actions for using it as the remote. So you sort of. The boys couldn't quite figure it out, and they'd but you've got to spend time with it and try to. So at the moment, I'm feeling like Tom Cruise out of Minority Report, waving my hands about, going, "It might be easier to actually do the volume control right now by picking up the remote, but no, I'm going to have a go at using this remote. It's got voice commands too, but they don't work very well."
I did feel a little bit inadequate with my hands flailing around in front of the screen to sort of do something.
So, but if you use something enough, it's an homage to the gaming stuff, the force feedback. So they're actually going to
respond back
into the bring on virtual reality, put me in a suit.
Yes,
force feedback.
Right. Yeah, no, the feedback to let you know that something's happened to this alert on the mouse would be really good.
It's clever. I mean, I like the fact that Apple get into existing technologies and go, well, this is an accepted norm. What can we do to sort of blow it up and make it different?
Exactly. Now they're also looking at the humble USB. Cable.
Ah, yes.
Last week we had a look at the upcoming standard change, which will allow for the reversible type USB, the same way as the lightning cable.
This is brilliant. That saves a couple of seconds every time you're plugging. Hey, I'm all about efficiencies.
It's more than that. It saves your sanity.
Yeah.
Because it takes three goes to get the thing in, so it would be much nicer if it went in the first time.
Oh, yes.
But that is for new connectors, and that will take a while to filter through. Apple are looking at changing the standard USB-A, which is the rectangular standard USB plug, so that the plug itself is reversible and to be compatible with existing sockets.
Which is something that they did with the lightning cable, didn't they, for iPhone, as in not the USB side, but the plug that goes into your phone is now reversible. Wow, amazing technological advance right there.
but it's such a simple conceptual thing that helps people use devices and makes it so much easier. It's pretty good.
Good. It's clever.
Yes, indeed.
Can I just say a very quick hello to Andrew, who has just in the last few minutes liked our Facebook page.
Oh,
thank you, Andrew.
Oh,
and you've also emailed in mentioning the Apple mouse. Fair point. They just don't cut it for ease of use. As compared to PC mice. I'm of the actual, this is, PC versus Mac right here, because I really do like the touch interface on top of the mouse that, you can move it around and actually use that surface as well as an extra way of interacting with your computer. But, it's horses for courses. Some people like lots of buttons on their mice. And just, whichever, where you position your thumb makes a big difference. That's,
A little while ago, I crossed over to the dark side.
Mm. Hang on, which side did you start with?
Which I was the enlightened Windows user. Enlightened Windows user. Yeah. I have now crossed over onto the dark side, and I sport a Mac.
Yes.
I also run Windows on the Mac because,
you can.
Yes, exactly.
It's good hardware.
But the thing was, I bought a mouse, the Apple mouse with it. I don't use it because I love the trackpad on the Mac Book Pro. Hmm. And it's so much better than any Windows trackpad that's out there.
Yeah, it's actually glass. The trackpad on an Apple laptop is glass. You wouldn't think it by looking at it, but that gives it a certain feel that I think you don't really get on plastic.
No, but it's also the gesture controls that work really, really well even in Windows.
Yes, definitely.
That's enough for our Apple fanboy club.
I thought you weren't part of it, Michael.
Whose is the new Facebook like? Is that what was Andrew?
Andrew, yeah.
Andrew, don't unlike us just because we seem to be all Mac lovers, all right? Just please come along to the Facebook page for Techno Gaze and stay and like, and the boys will very much appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes.
A few more. Like 10 by the end of the show would be nice.
Mm.
So what do? Just get on Facebook, search Techno Gaze, and you'll find us?
Techno Gaze.
Great.
Yep. On Joy 94.9 is the words to look for. Yeah,
cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely like us.
10 more by the end of the show. Thanks.
Yes. Now, the UK is starting to test self-driving trucks.
Mm. Is this a good idea?
I think it is, actually, because I trust technology more than I trust a bunch of truck drivers. Mm. Now I've upset half a dozen truck drivers out there.
We're going to stand back here. And I don't think that's a thought. That could be my argument. I'll take the other side.
I trust technology more than I trust people. How about that? Now I've got everybody hating me.
Can I just reverse that? So I ride a motorbike sometimes, and oftentimes, I'm actually, you have to be quite vigilant.
He wears leathers, guys.
Sometimes, yeah. Maybe not on the bike.
I was going to say on the bike. What was the URL?
As a bike rider, you need to be quite vigilant over the traffic conditions and what's going on around you. Mm-hmm. And you kind of... You have an understanding of how people think when they drive, because you are typically a driver yourself when you're a motorbike rider. Mm-hmm. You've been in a car before and the ways. So you keep an eye out for people hanging back behind other cars and about to move into your lane and stuff like that.
Yep.
When it's a computerized driver, are you looking out for the same things? It's actually a change in the way that you have to think about these trucks. And will it be obvious that they are computer driven, apart from having to look in the cab and see that there's no person in there? Like, how will I know as a rider that truck
is... Well, this specific test...
It does involve people in the cabs.
Right.
And the idea here is...
God, even more confusing. I can't even look for empty cabs.
No, just you can figure out the computer control one with the driver who's not doing anything except putting the feet up.
I'm just having a bit of a snooze.
The feet
out the window. They're looking at having convoys or packs of trucks, five, six, seven, eight, ten, sort of in a row.
Right.
Each of the trucks have got lasers and infrared cameras to make sure they don't hit each other.
Mm.
There will be a person in every single truck, but they will be doing administrative type office work, which is, I don't know, Facebooking or something like that. But the lead truck will have a driver who's actually doing the driving.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they need someone actually driving all of them?
I don't think it's a technology requirement. I think it's more of a, this is a way that we're going to introduce it, make sure that it works properly as a trial, and then eventually one day we might change.
It seems a bit... I'm a bit concerned about that, because that's putting the onus on... five trucks or however many this convoy is going to include on one single person, almost. Like, if they're following each other, which I presume part of... That's the definition of a convoy, right?
Yes.
So, what is that?
Off the cliffs of Dover. follow each one.
Interesting, though, because, eventually we're all going to want to not have to drive and make the car do it itself.
We'll want to drive for specific reasons, because we enjoy driving, but we don't enjoy driving all the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's right. Getting back to your comment before, Mark, about how can you tell if it's driverless or not, part of the reason that you need to be so vigilant is because cars and drivers react in unpredictable ways.
Mm.
By being a computer, it's going to be able to sense motorbike drivers that much better and therefore is going to cause less issue. But I think you're right in knowing, is it driverless or not? Do you need to worry or don't you need to worry about it?
The question I'll ask is, will it actually sense me correctly? Like, is it sensitive enough to figure out that there is a bike, which are smaller you know, oftentimes I think you and I were in a car that had one of those radar cruise control.
It doesn't always recognize a bike.
Yep, that's really concerning. If you're as a driver, you're relying on this system to slow down for vehicles in front of you, but that there's some vehicles that it doesn't pick up on. That's a problem.
Good to know before you turn it on, I would say.
Yes.
Exactly. But you know what? I think by 2040, we're not going to have any of these discussions.
That's right. Transporter technology, thanks.
Yes, because by 2040, I will need a driverless car. That's for certain.
We have a correction to make. You know, Andrew, we spoke about Andrew's preference for mice before, and it was very clearly a preference just for mice.
Yes.
So he's actually in the Apple camp, and vehemently so.
Enough to
email us in again.
Lovely. Well, Andrew, in that case, can you get some of your friends, your Mac-loving friends, to like the TechnoGaze Facebook page?
He's a fapple.
we like Andrew fans as well. Andrew? Android fans. Yes, fans of Andrew. You need to...
Andrew, do you have a Facebook page that we can
As usual,
Windows fans, we love Windows fans too. We're all about diversity on TechnoCase.
Exactly.
We have to come up with a new acronym outside of LGBTIQ. Something different.
AA.
Yeah, no. We'll workshop later.
No. We've got lots more coming up very, very shortly here on Joy 94.9.
Gay radio online all the time. Joy 94.9.
Yes, we're online here on TechnoGaze at 13 minutes to 1. Now, Ty, you and I need to go out for a break.
Yes.
Mark, Twitter, go. Speak to everyone in a few minutes.
Twitter
Bye.
Rant begins now. Twitter have decided to manipulate or start working on their feed service. So
no, they're not manipulating the timeline, are they?
Well, it's not
actually the timeline sounds something like out of Doctor Who, doesn't it?
Yes. If you go back and alter the timeline, you've got to be careful of those paradoxes.
Yeah. So there's been an ongoing sort of approach at Twitter to start monetizing their service. So
shocking.
You know, back in maybe 2 or 3 years ago, do you remember how there weren't any ads in your Twitter feed? There weren't any, you know, suggested tweets so much. It might have been, friends recommended this, and that might have been a paid-for thing and that sort of thing. But it was still very much user-oriented, user-generated stuff. Now, they're talking about actually manipulating and inserting new tweets or tweets from people that you don't necessarily follow. Just because they are promoted or paid for or that sort of thing. So
is it based on perhaps your interest as well? So if you're tweeting about a certain topic, that somebody else talking about this topic may also have their tweets inserted?
I could imagine that they're opening the door for a whole bunch of ways to monetize.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the idea. So, obviously they're trying to do that, hey, I want to show you a tweet, something that you don't follow because we think, as Twitter and the methodology and the algorithm that we've written, think you want a view. And, of course, they will then use that for the advertising space as well.
Yes.
So they're going to perfect that technology, you know, innocuously, although Twitter users are a little bit upset.
This is not unheard of social media platforms. So Facebook have been doing this for quite some time now. I always thought that there was... Yeah.
Gasp!
Sorry, I just had to use a sound effect for at least one for the show. One.
Right.
The sound effects are a little bit like word processing in the early days. You know, you put 3,000 fonts onto a page. See how many sound effects you can cram into one show.
No, so there was a very serious topic. So Facebook have been doing it for quite some time. Twitter was almost like the bastion of sticking to the users and how they generate content and being, you know, it's just the feed is just literally what's coming at you. So if someone tweeted, it ends up on your feed if you're following them.
Because it's very much about going, well, I want to hear from this person, so I will follow them, but then actually getting content and it's, you know, you get that now when somebody else retweets something, so you actually are seeing content from people that you don't follow, but it's purely on recommendation of somebody that you follow. What Twitter are proposing and trying to do with the timeline is to give you content that
they decide.
Which really goes against the initial ethos of, you know, of the product.
It does. It's you know, a platform for all to communicate regardless. It's It also concerns me because it is another social media platform that suddenly an algorithm is going to choose what you see and what you don't see. Mm-hmm. We've seen that with Facebook already.
Yeah.
It kind of works for me. I don't really mind. But what am I missing out on? What don't I know, you know, in my Facebook feed?
Probably a bit. How many friends you got? Lots.
300 or so. Yeah, about the average.
That's a bit of content. You wouldn't be able to consume it all. So.
No, and that's the thing, right? So it does put friends that I often communicate with, I know it puts them higher up in the list of things that are likely to end up in my newsfeed, and I appreciate that. But what about those other friends that I haven't kept in contact? Mm. How does it decide to suddenly
need to delete them.
Well,
if you're not interested enough to
cull your friends.
No, but, okay, so I'm not interested enough, but is that because I haven't seen anything from them? I don't sort of get to know them as a person anymore?
It's a bit of a catch-22. It's like search engines dishing up search results based on previous behavior of yours. Mm. So you keep on getting to see the same thing. But in some ways, that mirrors life because you tend to interact with people that share the same views of you, and you don't necessarily hear other things.
It's an algorithm that's choosing that, right? It's a programmed algorithm. So there's rules and there's ifs and you know, ors and ands in there to say...
And program bugs.
And bugs, absolutely. And I have no control over that, or very little control over that. Like, I can start to try and manipulate it if I wanted to, but that's actually against IP that I'm sure Facebook would very highly guard. What that algorithm is part of their business model. It's part of you know, how they sell their service to the advertisers.
Yep.
So,
and Twitter would be trying to replicate all the good things that Facebook has worked for Facebook. I mean, they'd be silly not to.
I mean, it's silly to think of Twitter as being, you know, just because they're Twitter and they're worldwide and, you know, they've had a wonderful ethos to start with, to think that they're not also a corporate entity and they don't also need to make money.
Got
to
make money.
And once you launch on the public internet, once you're a public float, you know, you've got your shareholders that you're accountable to, and they invest and they want to get a return on their money as well. No, that's right. Now, we've spoken about Secret before.
Oh, yes.
This is the application, the Secret application.
This is the one where you can tweet anonymously or whatever you want to call it.
But you tweet or you put status updates to your friends.
Yes.
So it matches up your contact list, say, from your phone, if you choose to give it that access to that, or from Facebook. It matches you up with friends, but it only marks them as friends. Mm. It doesn't say who they are.
Doesn't identify them, yes. And you get to see messages from friends of friends as well.
Yes.
And then if you if you find a post from around the world and you go, that's nice, and you like it, then your friends will see that one of their friends, they don't know which friend, actually liked that or commented on it. Yep. But you still don't know. So you spend a whole bunch of time trying to psychoanalyze which friend
also
said that.
Conversationally, like Michael was trying to probe me last night. Was this you? Was this you? And monitoring my facial expressions at the time, I'm like, what? No.
What did you reckon? I thought it was him.
Poker face right here. Straight up.
I don't think probe was probably the right word.
Anyway. I chose that.
And I also find, and maybe it's just because of my circle of friends, but there seems to be a high percentage of gay men using it.
I think, it's an interesting sort of phenomenon with it, how there's a lot of gay content
there's a lot of male
content.
It's probably a byproduct of who your friends are.
Yes.
But there is the everyone feed as well, which also has a fair chunk of, I don't know if it gears that to your own tastes, as in I'm a gay man, or it's figured out that because of my friendship group, I'm more likely to like this stuff.
Yeah. It's weird.
There's a secret sauce behind it.
A secret sauce, as in SAU.
They're tweaking. They'd be tweaking their algorithms and methodology.
Definitely. But we're lucky enough to enjoy Secret, but if you're in Brazil, it's just been banned.
Oh.
Now, Brazilian law has got a very interesting thing to it, if you want to call it that.
Yes.
That you're not allowed to, you know, you can have free expression, but you're not allowed to do it anonymously.
Oh.
And so Secret is obviously against its constitution, actually.
Well, Twitter's kind of...
Well...
How do they deal with Twitter?
I think that causes problems, but at least when you tweet something, there is some sort of identity behind it.
On Secret, when you say, if you comment on somebody's post, it just gives you it's all based on iconography. So, and it's random each time and then you can engage in a conversation with people and you're just still represented by the same icon. So yes, it is It is secret. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
That's right.
Well, they can't use it in Brazil. Oh, well, I don't think they're missing out on much, really.
It is entertaining.
Oh, yeah, but it does your head in. Like, you can just... No, don't do it. If you're thinking about getting on secret, don't.
It's like this wonderful game. It is a little bit addictive.
No.
Now, as usual, we are running out of time very rapidly.
That's fine.
So we'll wind up the show in a few minutes here on Joy 94.9.
Techno Gaze
here on Joy 94.9 with Ty, Mark and Michael, and we're about to wrap up.
Mm.
Now, we started the show talking about the internet being full.
Yes.
And how, you know, your mobile phone wouldn't work or anything like that. There's a mobile phone out there that will work when the internet is full.
What's this you speak of?
It's called the No Phone.
What's the No Phone?
Well, for people old enough to remember the Clayton's ads...
Oh. The what?
The Clayton's ads.
Oh, you're young, Mark. Clayton's was a...
Well, it was an alternative to alcohol and it was the drink that you're having when you're not having a drink. This is the phone that you're having when you're not having a phone. It's very healthy for you. No irradiation from...
Oh, wow.
Waves from Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, because it doesn't have Wi-Fi or Bluetooth.
Yeah, what, really? How does it... What's it...
It's basically a nice piece of plastic.
No.
That simulates the size and feel of a phone. It's probably a little bit like, you know, if you're giving up cigarettes, you just want to hold something in your hand, put something in your mouth. If you're trying to get off the addiction of your mobile phone, you just hold this in your hand, put it up to your ear every now and then, put it in your pocket.
And I go through anxiety if I'm disconnected from the internet. I lost my phone. I couldn't get on. I didn't know what time it was. I didn't...
This is a perfect gift, though. If you are in that situation, what happens? You can have that feeling of...
It just needs something in the jacket pocket. That's just right. To weigh it down a little bit. Yep. To remove that initial anxiety.
And then you're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not bad.
We will probably put that up on the Facebook page for those people that are very interested.
Yes.
Well, that's it. If you've missed any part of the show, or perhaps you're looking to peruse previous episodes, you can do so by browsing joy.org.au/technogaze. Coming up next is Cravings with Pete Dillon. Ty, thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you very much for having me on the show. It's been... a lot of fun.
It's been great. And Mark, thank you as well.
No worries.
Have a great weekend, everyone, and we will catch you as usual next week.
Bye now.
Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.